Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Do you want to go to rugby heaven? Let's go back to 1987 with Squidge, with Squidge. Let's go back to 87 with Squidge.
Hello, good afternoon, good morning, good and afternoon. Welcome to the Squidge Rugby Succession Retrospective Podcast, the only rugby podcast that is actually dedicated to the HBO original series Succession. So I'm joined as ever by Mr. William Owen. How are you doing?
I'm all right. And you know what? I'm going to make a confession on Succession I've never actually seen it, and yet I host a podcast on it. And you
every
know
week.
What's even crazier about that?
What?
We are on episode 69 of this podcast.
That's pretty wild. That's pretty wild.
Pretty nice, isn't it?
I respect you holding back until the nicest episode for you to actually come and mention the fact that you've never seen the focal point
come
of this
clean,
podcast.
Come clean, bro. I've come clean. Yeah, but excluding the special episodes we've done on other HBO series and like their Christmassy series that they've done and stuff like that.
If we exclude
them, this is the 69th episode of this podcast.
I thought...
What's the show called again? Succession.
Succession. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I thought our mini series on sharp objects was pretty good.
Yeah.
I think we've done a pretty good job of stretching this program that has about 29 episodes out to 69 episodes of podcast.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, look, everybody's done that stupid game of whatever it's called. There's probably about 90 podcasts about that.
What?
Have you heard that other HBO series, Game of something?
No.
Okay, never mind. Neither have I.
Is it about Donkey Kong?
Yeah.
Is it the one about the
That is a game, to be
the
fair.
The one about the two guys who are trying to beat each other's Donkey Kong high score, is it that? Did they make that into a TV series?
No.
Oh.
But that is a game, so therefore... Mm. Yeah, there's a lot of Game of Thrones podcasts, it looks like.
Are there?
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I'm just searching this now on Spotify. I'm just going... If anyone... sponsored by Spotify, which we're not... Yeah, it's there's a lot of them. There's more Game of Thrones podcasts than there are squid podcasts. We've now actually fallen down to the third biggest podcast with the word squid in its title.
What?
Yeah.
Who are bigger than us?
So one of them was the vampire squid who we
vampire squid.
We looked up before. The business podcast hosted by not Steve Walsh. And the second one is Big Squid with Justin Hamilton.
Oh, not Justin Hamilton.
Yeah, that bastard's overtaken us. According to Chartable, if you search Squid, we are the third podcast that comes up.
Justin Hamilton is a professional basketballer who currently plays with the Beijing Ducks.
Apparently he's an award-winning comedian, according to this.
Nope. Oh, Justin Harrison.
Justin Hamilton. Justin Harrison played second row for the Wallabies.
There is also two separate basketballers called Justin Hamilton.
Okay.
And they are the only Justin Hamiltons who come up when you type it into Wikipedia by the looks of things.
Okay.
There's also Justin Hamilton, comedian. Don't care about him.
Okay.
Justin Hamilton, boring. Safety. Oh, he's a college footballer.
I recently had, I was scrolling through Facebook.com, which is a website, if anyone's heard of it. It's not a very good one. And up came a targeted ad for me for a band called Squidge.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly it was because I've mentioned the concept Squidge in text messages and stuff.
Yeah.
And they've thought, oh, this guy's clearly into things with the word Squidge in it. And so a band called Squidge came up. I can't remember where they were from. They weren't very big at all. They were like a grassroots level band with like...
They're my band.
Three figures of likes on Facebook. They're your band.
Yeah.
What do you play?
Music. So I was also sent quite recently by our mother, who is we share a mother, which is crazy.
Yeah. You know that that Church's song, "The Mother We Share," or Church's song.
No.
That's you'll know it. That song's about us.
Yeah. So, and nobody else.
Yeah.
So her friend sent her a poster, and I don't know if you've seen this. I'm going to hold it up to the camera now. It is a poster seen at a local art centre for something called Squidge the Film.
Oh, wow. Is this podcast being adapted into a movie by HBO?
I think it is. So the tagline, it says, is a playful film exploring our sense of touch through dance and music. Interact with the magical light-up boxes full of textures and four little hands.
Four little hands. So the squidge in this movie canonically has four hands.
Yes.
That's pretty good. So it's like Leonie Nakarawa type deal.
For 3 to 8 year olds and their grown-ups.
I mean, that sounds pretty promising. I think one day we should do a special episode dedicated to that film.
This is on at the Belgrave Theatre in Coventry.
Okay.
Well, adverts are currently on sale. I love the fact that it's called Squidge the Film.
Mm.
Right. Because everything that does, A, it implies there is a Squidge previously. There is like a TV series or a comic book or something called Squidge. But whenever they do that, it's always the movie rather than the film.
The film. Yeah.
The film. They never call it the film.
Yeah. I mean, if it might be because I am me, but if I go onto Google and Google.com, that's another website you might have heard of.
That's crazy. That's such a silly name for a website.
It is, isn't it? I've never stopped to think about it. I definitely have when I'm a kid.
Yeah.
But when I type the word squidge in, it comes up with one of those like recommended for you things of squidge rugby there.
I've heard of that guy.
Yeah,
he's a
dickhead. But when you actually, when I actually type it in, there's a dictionary definition for squidge. There's something called boxers and kits, cutter and squidge, which sounds cool. And then squidge rugby. So, yeah, there's also,
slowly,
it comes up, people also search for squidge bakery.
Squidge bakery. That's such a better fit than squidge rugby.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah.
Why didn't I become
cutter and squidge, they make donuts. They have 4.7 stars from 3,474 ratings. They're based in Loughborough, so they're quite local to us.
Should we go and get a donut and visit Emily Scarrett?
I think we should. I think that sounds like a grand day out.
The two proudest things in Loughborough.
I've just found
that. And also, do you want to know a fun fact, right?
Yeah.
While we're talking about Loughborough.
Yeah.
Do you know who... So, you know Loughborough obviously famously has the university that's the biggest sporting university in the UK, right?
Yeah.
That's what Loughborough is largely famous for.
Yes.
You never believe who used to play for Loughborough Uni in rugby.
My mate Jordan.
So, you know... I don't care. So, you know, sorry, Jordan. So, you know the France in rugby?
Yes. I'm familiar with the
row,
France in rugby, yeah.
Thibaut Flamand, right?
Nah, he's from France. Doubt that ever happened. Definitely didn't happen.
You played for bloody Loughborough Uni.
Nah.
But, right, you'd hear that and you'd think, he played for the first team.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's an international, isn't it? That, you know, why would he play for, like, one of the other five teams below it? Especially the one that is five teams below it.
He played for the 15th.
Doubt it!
And since he's a second row, you'll never guess what position he plays.
Second row? It's got to be second row. There's no other position he could play.
Well, he played fly-off, didn't he?
What a mad story.
That's a fun fact that you'll never hear again.
Do you reckon
again?
Thibaut Flamand ever went to Cutter and Squidge and got a donut?
I really hope so. I really hope he's... Maybe that was why he became a second row, because he started eating too many donuts at Cutter and Squidge.
They do have 79,500 followers on Instagram. One person I follow follows them, so that's pretty impressive.
Hmm. So, anyway, Succession. So, yesterday, I, having got in and figuring I needed to eat something, I needed to watch this game ahead of we're recording this in the morning, and I knew, you know, because we're limited the amount of time both of us can make this week.
Yes,
where
because we are in the Six Nations.
Yep, and there's a lot going on. And we've got to also give you time to edit this before Friday.
Yes, that's it.
And cut out all the chat that isn't about the HBO original series Succession.
Yeah.
So I got in and I thought to myself, I reckon watch the game for tomorrow and be prepared and be ready. Or I can watch an episode of the HBO original series Succession.
I did wonder why you led with that line. I did wonder why that was relevant. Also, who are you?
Oh, like Robbie or Squidge or whatever you want to call me. Squidge the Film, off Squidge the Film, of, and Cutter and Squidge.
Yeah, yeah.
I make loads of donuts and plays for 8-year-olds.
Yeah. You explained who I am, but you didn't explain who you are. For everybody who doesn't know who's listening to this.
To know that. It's just all of the big Succession fans who really want to hear about what I think of Kendall Roy.
Yes, and Loughborough Donuts.
Yes. Yeah, so I watched that, and then I figured I'd watch the game in the morning, and I got up at a reasonable time. I went and had a wee, which is an important part of the story.
Was it a good one?
I then went back. It was fine.
Okay.
Went back to bed thinking, right, okay, I'll give myself 2 minutes to wake up properly, and then I'll watch the game. Woke up an hour later.
It's always the way it goes.
We said we were going to record in about 70 minutes' time. So I've crammed this game into just under an hour, which is over an hour.
That's a good superpower.
When it's a 1 hour 45 game.
Yes.
I have fast-forwarded through every stoppage and every replay. I have been through I also, right, had to walk into the office in that time and buy an umbrella because it was raining. And I didn't have one.
Did you?
And it was really tipping
it
down.
Watch the game while you were walking?
I was going to, but then I saw it was raining.
Right.
I was tempted to
start watching it using my data on the train home from your office last night.
I feel far more prepared to talk about the episode 9 of the second series of Succession than I do this game.
Yeah.
But this game is the one I'm doing a podcast on now.
Sure, yeah.
I've also...
Unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, there's an episode of Staff Let's Flats, the Channel 4 original series, where he goes around a flat that has no doors, just ropes, including the front door, and there's just a rope over everywhere there should be a door. And, the guy should have been around, no doors, just ropes, bro. That is very much what my notes are like.
Okay.
They are just... odd points that resemble notes. Like, there's something as a placeholder for notes, but they're not actual notes.
Sure, I get that. So, yeah, we're on Wales against Tonga from 1987. Specifically, the 29th of May, 1987. Do you want to know a fun fact about this game?
Please.
This game, a big thing that happened on this day, as well as Wales beating Tonga 29 points to 16... Tim Visser was born on this day.
Whoa! Holy shit.
So,
what a day.
At some point within a few hours of this game either starting or finishing, Tim Visser's mother gave birth to a future Scotland international, and little did she know, somewhere in the Netherlands, a Tim Visser was spawned.
That is absolutely wild.
Yep.
Do you want to know some more things that happened on this day?
I know Isaac Luke, the former New Zealand Rugby League player, was also born on this day. And something about Michael Jackson I looked up.
Michael Jackson attempted to buy the remains of the Elephant Man's body.
Yes, that's it. Do you think he was inspired by the birth of Tim Visser to do that?
I mean, he was... Yes. I mean, I was going to say he was clearly inspired by the film The Elephant Man about him, which came out a few years prior.
Yeah.
But also... I think it was mostly the birth of Tim Visser. He felt like a presence, like a wind change somewhere in the Netherlands.
Yeah,
exactly.
I felt
like suddenly I need to change this.
Well, Michael Jackson was famously a big fan of Tim Visser.
John Landis was also found not guilty of the involuntary manslaughter of 3 actors during one of his films.
Well, I doubt that was inspired by the birth of Tim Visser.
I had no idea that was a thing that happened.
Nope.
Yep. So, famous deaths... a stuntman died aged 40, an Indian politician who was a former Indian Prime Minister, and an English composer called Phyllis Tate all died. Those are notable things that happened on the same day as this game, which was, of course, a Friday.
Right? Yes.
And the commentator in this game repeatedly makes the point, Tonga will probably play much better because this game is being played on a Friday and their previous game was played on a Sunday, and that made them all really upset because they don't like to do things on Sunday because they're deeply religious as a team.
So, yeah, he really hammered that home, that they play better not on a Sunday. And he always phrased it like that. He basically would always say, like, the day today is not Sunday. He'd basically frame it that way and say, like, therefore Tonga are a good team. They're not put off by the fact that they're wishing they were worshipping instead of playing the World Cup.
And it's a... Look, I understand it. Well, it was a factor. And obviously we mentioned on the previous episode that it was... You know, they had to be given special government dispensation.
Yes.
Because Sunday was seen as a day where you do nothing in Tonga at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Shops didn't open and, you know...
It was a day of worship.
Radio and TV weren't allowed to broadcast until 1 p.m.
Yes.
Until people had been to church and had the chance to go to church and, you know, things like that. But at the same time, you do go, well, they can still focus and prepare.
Not going to lie, when I play a game, I forget what day it is.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not spending the day thinking, it's Saturday.
And it wasn't like they had the, you know, they're playing on a Sunday then a Friday thing of a short turnaround.
Yeah.
Like, it was, no, they were just thrown straight into this.
Yeah, yeah.
It was the first game of the World Cup.
Sure, yeah. No, it is interesting that. But, yeah, Tonga do play well. They do play their part in this game, in fairness. The other thing, before we even get to, like, anything resembling the teams or kickoff, is when you open the video for this game, the first thing you get is a Welsh choir in the crowd singing Callan Lan and Sospen Fach, including the Who Beat the All Blacks verse in New Zealand, which is badass.
It does make you realise why the Welsh had the reputation they do for singing.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. It was really great, actually. It was really patriotic. Yeah.
And it really stood out amongst all of the crowd. And you could hear it the whole way of these handful of Welsh people really singing.
And look, it's way better having that, celebrating the Scarlets 9-3 win over the All Blacks with the traditional Welsh songs. I'd much rather that than the gangster rap that they tend to play at rugby games all the time in all of these games. And look,
what they need to do is they just need to absolutely blast out Land of Hope and Glory
on a
loop. Because who, when they hear Land of Hope and Glory, isn't instantly pumped up to smash 1,000 Tongans?
I've got a good question for you, actually.
Mm.
So, I'm going to give you two songs. Which of these two would you rather hear before a big match? Let's say Wales have made a World Cup quarterfinal, right? They're playing against, let's say,
anyone but Ireland, because we could lose that.
Like, yeah, okay, yeah. Much like in 2019, playing against France. Okay. Okay. I'm going to give you two songs. Okay, you've got to choose which one you would rather hear beforehand. Okay, one of them is I Got a Feeling by the Black Eyed Peas, as per 2011, kicking every game. And the other one, this is a real classic. This is a big banger that everyone wants to hear before kickoff. Jerusalem.
Oh. So, I mean, look, okay. The thing Jerusalem has going for it is basically the same song as World in Union, which we'll have played anyway because it's the World Cup.
That's fair. That's a good point. Okay, swap it out for Land of Hope and Glory.
Land of Hope and Glory. The problem is, right, whenever anyone in the world hears Land of Hope and Glory, they instantly pull on an England shirt and start and just become English.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and passionately
like
English.
They're in the Dove Men Plus Care advert.
Exactly. Exactly. They become Ben Youngs lathering himself up in oils in the bath.
Yeah, yeah. And doing a really sexy dive pass.
Yeah, and then picking up his kid and going, I'm going to dive pass with you as well, straight into the washing machine. And all of that, right? That's what happens when anyone hears Land, Hope and Glory. They just become instantly incredibly passionately English, no matter who they are. Which is why they chose up a gangster rap at Twickenham in the first place, because they found the opposition all just put on England jerseys. It just became 30 on none.
Yeah, yeah.
And the referee as well. Just gave everything England's way.
Yeah.
Something, something Mike Adamson. Plus, not bringing anything up.
Plus, the annoying thing for England themselves is their kit providers, so Umbro right now, got really annoyed because it just meant that their kit was automatically distributed to everybody and they weren't making any profits because they were too easily accessible, England shirts.
And they had to make so many of them as well.
Yeah.
Like, they just don't have the numbers to do that.
They're more to just vanish from the warehouse.
They all just vanished. They're all just gone.
Yeah, and they've just appeared on people's torsos.
Suddenly everyone in Twickenham has one on their back.
Yeah, and everyone watching on telly as well.
Blazers. Yeah.
Yeah, it's...
Well, that's why they have to go to adverts on ITV.
Yeah, so instead... Instead they start...
Well, the thing is, right, so on BBC, if there was ever an England game at Twickenham on the BBC, which there normally isn't, the reason it will go to ITV is because otherwise that would have to come out of taxpayers' money. That would have to come out of the licence fee money.
Of course.
The money to pay for an England shirt for everyone in the country watching.
Yeah.
And like 7 million people watched England-Scotland on the BBC.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can't be doing with that. Can't be giving 7 million England shirts away.
That is the story of why England now run out to Da Mystery of Chess Boxing by the Wu-Tang Clan.
Yeah. I mean, it's exactly the reason that the moment the anthem's finished, you hear, it is now time to witness the power of street knowledge.
Raw, I'm going to give it to you. We're no trivia, etc. Raw like cocaine, straight from Bolivia. So we're talking about Wales against Tonga from the 1987 Rugby World Cup. And do you know what struck me about this match?
What struck you, William Rees-Owen?
Leek Boy is back, and he is older!
So, talk me through this.
So, again, anyone who listened to our Wales-Ireland game will be familiar with Leek Boy, who planted a leek in the ground. And so, yeah, we hear the beautiful sounds of Calon Lan being sung from the stands. And before any teams are out on the field or anything, there is a Welshman with a massive leek. Like, this leek is probably taller than him. It's massive. And he's just carrying it across the pitch, like an army cadet, kind of marching across the field. But he looks like he has two bodyguards either side of him, protecting him and his leek. And then he just vanishes. And I don't know what happened to him. Did the leek plant him in the ground this time?
It's a good question, isn't it? I think because the leek previously just fell over a lot.
Yes. It was held up by Die the Dragon.
Whilst Leek Boy worshipped it.
Yes.
And I think without that option, without Die the Dragon there, everything falls apart. We need Die the Dragon.
Yeah. Okay. Should we move on to the teams?
I think we should move on to Land of Hope and Glory.
No, I don't think we should. I think we should move on to the teams.
This game is played 6 months before the release of Straight Outta Compton.
Okay. That's it.
Which made it even more unlikely when at halftime they just pumped out all of Express Yourself.
Yeah. That's a banger, to be fair.
It is a banger.
Should we look at the teams?
Sure.
So, should we start with Tonga?
Yes, let's.
Well, they don't make many changes to their previous game against Canada, but they do bring in Manu Vinopola starts on the right wing. Not that Manu Vinopola. And they bring in a player called Malu Felice at number 8, which made me very happy that there was a Felice playing. Of no relation to Fowl.
I imagine he must be some sort of relation.
Yeah.
He must be some sort of cousin somehow.
You'd hope so. But
in a way, the Ioannis are all related, but they don't know what the common link is.
Mm, yes. You know, Monty Ioanni is Digby's nephew, isn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
But then the Ioanni brothers that play for New Zealand.
Yes, Rico and Akira.
Are supposedly no relation.
Yeah.
But having looked into it, that surname only comes from one very small village.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Like, they are related, like, but very far back.
Similar to the Umangas.
Something similar with a lot of Umanga, yeah.
Yeah.
I imagine there's probably a similar link with the Felices, and, you know, there's a lot of, like, South Sea Island surnames that probably.
Sure.
All come from the same sort of space.
Yeah, that makes sense. That does make sense. They also bring in Mofuke Tuungafasi, who for his first cap, who is, of course, the father of Ofa, the current All Blacks tight head, and his brother who plays provincial rugby in New Zealand. So that's another new family tie that we have in here, which is pretty cool.
There's so many of them popping up.
I love it, though. I really enjoy, like, seeing, like, oh, yeah, your dad's playing.
And again, they happen, you know, throughout the Welsh team as well.
Yes.
You've obviously got the Moriarty brothers who spawned Ross at the minute.
Well, not both of them.
No, both of them did.
Oh,
both
okay.
Both of them did.
Okay.
Well, no, I mean, a normal person in order to spawn a Ross Moriarty would need two.
That's very fair, yeah.
But I reckon either Richard or Paul could have managed it on their own.
Yeah, that's fair. And we both keep forgetting which one is actually Ross's dad. But because we are young. But yes, so Dick Moriarty moves in the second row from number 8 to accommodate for Phil Davis coming in at number 8.
Yeah.
Who is, of course, the current coach of Namibia, is he not?
No, he's left Namibia.
Left Namibia.
Yep, of course, the current coach of Namibia is Alex Okotsir.
Of course it is. Of course it is. But Phil Davis, previously coaching
Phil Davis is the World Rugby Director of Rugby or something.
Oh, of course he is. Which I have no idea what that actually means.
He's the Director of Coaching for World Rugby. No one knows. But World Rugby have given him a job.
He's on the payroll. That's all that matters.
Because he's got such a good career throughout everything else.
Yep.
At one point during this game, the commentator talks over his most famous moment on a rugby pitch, which is being punched by Wade Dooley.
Yes. So, didn't they say that both him and Adrian Hadley have both been punched by Wade Dooley at different points?
Well, they pull to him, you know, him walking away and is like, Phil Davis, of course, this is the man famous for being punched by Wade Dooley.
But weren't most people punched by Wade Dooley, though? Like,
most people were punched by Wade Dooley.
If that's a way to become famous, like, you know, it might as well be you become famous by pulling on an England rugby jersey.
Look. It's the old saying, in the future, everyone will have 15 minutes where they get punched by Wade Dooley.
Yes, That is a famous saying. Yeah, to carry on with the Wales team, so in the backs they bring in Malcolm Dacey at 10, experienced player, for his last cap, which is a shame.
His first game for 3 years at fly half.
Yes.
He's won a handful of caps at fullback, but Jiffy had happened in between.
Yes. But he was very much a fly half. Like, he went on a Lions tour, didn't he, Dacey? I'm pretty sure.
But he's
quite a sort of well thought upon 10 for Wales in the 80s. But as you say, Jiffy happened, so Dacey was sort of pushed out of the team. But, you know, a decent 10 in all, by all accounts. And they also, of course, bring on the wing Glenn Webb. And, of course, as soon as I saw his name on there, I was like, oh, it's that game, is it?
Yes. So Malcolm Dacey, to pick up on him,
yes,
played one game for the British and Irish Lions. The British and Irish Lions played the rest of the world in order to celebrate the owners at the Cardiff Arms Parks.
Okay.
In order to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the International Rugby Board's formation.
Oh, okay. That's quite cool.
So he played for the British and Irish Lions in that game. I'll tell you what, when you look through the team, so he replaced John Rutherford, who started. He came on for him. Do you want to hear the team for the British Lions?
Go on.
So this was in 86, which was the year before this World Cup.
Okay.
It was also used as a potential launch pad for the World Cup as well, and they started talking about it and so on after this. So, the teams, right? And I'd seen this briefly, and I've got planned on mentioning it on one episode, but we're doing it now.
Mm-hmm.
Gavin, for the British and Irish Lions, Gavin Hastings, Trevor Ringland, Brendan Mullen, John Devereux, John Rutherford, Robert Jones, Jeff Whitefoot, Colin Deans, Des Fitzgerald, Wade Dooley, Donald Levin, John Jeffrey, John Beattie.
It's a pretty strong team.
Malcolm Dacey was one of the two used replacements alongside Ian Paxton.
Mm-hmm.
Opposite them, Serge Blanco, Andrew Slack, Michael Liner at 13.
Wow.
Wayne Smith, the future coach.
Bloody hell.
Playing, you know, the professor himself.
Yeah. Wow.
So he was in. You then have him at 10 with Nick Farr-Jones at 9.
Right.
Enrico Rodriguez, the suspicious Australian.
Oh, yes, of course.
Prop. Tom Lawton. Gary Knight, who doesn't have a Wikipedia page, so I assume it's my friend's dad.
Okay.
Because I've got a friend whose dad is called Gary Knight.
Yeah.
And I assume it's him.
Sounds likely.
Steve Cutter. Shulk Berger.
Excuse me, what?
Oh, senior. It's his dad.
Oh, okay, that's cool.
The father of.
Oh, that's cool.
And then Mark Shaw and Simon Pevendron.
Okay.
The final score was 7-15 to the rest of the world.
It sounds like a great game.
The game was played during a massive storm and was basically ruined by enormous, enormous rain.
Right.
Which is really, really fitting for the 100th anniversary of rugby.
Yes, it definitely is. It sounds like a game everyone wants to be involved in. When you said that you really wanted to get this at some point, I was really expecting Dr. Jeff Banterfield to be involved. But
well, I think I realise now that I left it out because it was pretty boring.
Yeah, sure. But hey, thanks for the intel.
But hey, those were who were considered the best players in the world.
Yes.
Because it was genuinely a worldwide search, and they very controversially included a few South Africans.
Oh, right.
Which they wouldn't normally have done, considering, you know, they didn't invite the World Cup for apartheid.
Yeah.
And all that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so the anything else to say on the Welsh team?
Let's talk about Glenn Webb before we get into the game itself. Because Glenn Webb, so he's quite often told the story of this game. It's quite a well-known match within sort of Welsh rugby folklore. Glenn Webb was the first black man to ever play for Wales.
He wasn't. No, Mark Brown won one cap about a year earlier.
Oh, okay.
So he's the second.
He's the second, okay. But he was seen as the first sort of black icon in Welsh sort of culture.
He was the
and
first kind
and,
of
yeah.
figure, you know, he's the first like known player.
Yes.
And I made that, I know Mark Brown was, because I'd made that mistake myself in a video.
Okay, fair enough.
My video on Roy Francis, I referred to Glenn Webb as the first black player for Wales in 1987.
No, my apologies.
And it was a year earlier. Mike Brown did.
It seems
Mark Brown.
Yes. It seems like a stat that is thrown around quite a lot, even if wrongly.
So Glenn Webb scores the first try in this game, not to get ahead of ourselves.
Yes.
So that is the first try scored by a person of colour for Wales.
Wow, that's brilliant. That's amazing. And yeah, Glenn Webb just seems like a generally really good bloke. Like, I get really good vibes from him, and like when they've had him on Scrum 5 in past before and stuff. And like, Glenn Webb's Wikipedia page is really interesting if you go on there, because it talks about that he was one of the first people Gareth Thomas came out to and said that, you know, he understands what it's like to sort of feel like an outsider in a Welsh sports team.
Yeah.
And apparently Glenn Webb was just really, really good for, like, gently helping him come out and everything. And, yeah, like, he's done loads for, like, you know, anti-racism stuff in Wales and sport and stuff. It's great.
The other thing was that, and I'm not the person qualified to talk about this, so I don't want to get into too much detail, but Mark Brown passed, as it were. Mm. You know, like, he was quite a light-skinned black person.
Right.
And so has said himself, like, well, no, had, you know, but it's, has said himself he never faced much in the way of racial abuse or racial was treated that differently, whereas Glenn Webb was, and there was a lot of pushback, and even when he became, you know, this kind of Welsh player, and as his Wikipedia page states, like, he's Wales's first black icon, and I don't just mean Welsh rugby, like Wales,
like
as a nation,
culture,
like, he was huge in terms of race relations in Wales,
and,
like, I remember our grandmother saying once that of someone she'd met once in Cardiff saying, oh, he was lovely. I mean, he was black, but he was lovely.
Jesus Christ, that's an awful thing.
And it was like, that is horrible. I understand what you mean is, I understand you think it's a nice thing that you've said, but that is horrible.
It is.
And I think that was the general kind of vibe around a lot of Wales.
Yes.
I remember our granddad saying he didn't meet someone who wasn't white till he was in his, like, late 20s.
Wow.
So I think you can't overstate the importance of not just Glenn Webb coming in for this game and playing, but then going on to score a hat trick as he does, and be, you know, coach the,
like, his
standout,
his individual performance
in a World Cup match.
Yeah, his individual performance in this game is still talked about to this day, like, more so than probably the rest of the World Cup that Wales went on to kind of play.
Well, it's probably the second most, from a Welsh perspective, it's the second most famous thing in this World Cup to Adrian Hadley try and pull forward one kick in the first place
that
match.
We'll come to. Another fun thing about Glenn Webb that I didn't know until yesterday, he was on Gladiators.
What?
Yes. Glenn
Webb. With Darcy Graham's dad.
Yeah, I was going to say, at some point we need to cover this with friend of the pod, Cammy Black, as our Gladiators expert. Look, I know that Glenn Webb's not Scottish, but I'm sure that Cammy could make an exception.
Oh, man. I mean, he was just an incredible athlete as well, I think.
Yes.
He was incredibly, incredibly fast.
Very. And agile.
That stands out. And far stronger than a winger of his build, because he wasn't like a big winger at all. Far stronger than a winger of his build should be. And the few times he just shrugs off tackles from bigger men.
Yeah. Not to sort of... We can do this slightly out of order, but Webb's first try that he scores very early on in the game, it's about probably 5 minutes in, if that. He runs a really, really nice support line off, I think it's Hopkins, makes sort of a half break.
Hopkins,
and Hopkins times the pass to him perfectly, and Webb just, like, looked very comfortably like he's going to finish from there, which isn't something you can often say about many wingers in this World Cup. And he just looks really composed finishing that try.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, it's great. I think both do very well.
Yeah.
It's very calmly made, that break.
It is, yeah.
And, yeah, then Hopkins...
How many selfish centres wouldn't give this pass in this World Cup?
Yeah. And the commentary make the point of how rare it is to see a winger looking for work like Glenn Webb does and wrapping around from the other wing.
Of course, he scores it on the left wing, doesn't he?
Finding space.
When he's playing on the right,
Can I just mention, since we've moved on, my favourite Glenn Webb story?
Go on.
Which I thought was going to come up. So, as I mentioned, Glenn Webb played top-level rugby for Wales in the 80s.
Yes.
Which, you look at Ashton Hewitt a few years ago saying, like, he was getting monkey chance until he played at international, pretty much, like, for Wales in the 20s level. And Glenn Webb once had, when he was playing, I believe, Welsh Prem, when he was playing for Bridgend, Glenn Webb had a banana thrown at his feet whilst he was waiting for a scrum to start.
Jesus Christ, man.
Yep, by a fan who had brought in a banana in order to throw it at him from an opposition team. Webb picked the banana up, peeled it, took one bite and threw it back into the crowd.
That is the most casual response you can get.
Very calmly.
Like, that is the best comeback he could have given.
Yeah.
Not that he needed to give a comeback, but given he opted to, that's the best thing he could have done.
Apparently he got a huge cheer from the crowd.
Good lad. Good lad. I've never heard that story before. That's that's obviously terrible that that happened.
Yeah.
But just
continues. I think it tells you a lot about him.
Yes, it continues the narrative of Glenn Webb being a good lad, doesn't it?
Yes.
Which, yeah, he very much is. So, looking at the kickoff from the game, right?
Mm.
And we get a couple of minutes in, and the commentators bring up a big rugby values moment. You're aware of what I'm about to talk about, right? So, the Tongan halfback, Talai Fifita, loses a boot from his foot, and he goes down to tie his shoelaces up. And Richard Moriarty, being the big rugby values man and captain that he is, very generously, in the name of goodwill, according to the commentators, lets Fifita put his boot on before Wales throw into a line-out. And so the co-commentator says, "I think that the rule about the boot comes off, play goes on, is stupid." And apparently it was an established rule that in rugby, if somebody's boot comes off, the referee's not allowed to stop the game to let them tie it up, and that's something they discussed.
Well, I thought it was the other way around. I thought it was the opposite. I thought, no, because I was pretty sure the point they were making was that the game does stop if a boot comes off, but it doesn't stop for an injury necessarily.
Oh, okay.
Because he was saying, like, I think it's stupid that this game has stopped because a boot's come off, but sometimes you see this happens and there's, like, free injuries at the same time.
No, he was saying that they usually say play on because of boot coming off, because this happens two or three more times in this game. And there's a point where somebody loses a boot and the commentator says, oh yeah, well, he's lost his boot, he's going to have to run to the sideline to put that on while play goes on. So the commentator was very angry about it, but Dick Moriarty was being very, very reasonable. And it's
very
just
not a dick.
Rugby values, man. Letting your opposition player put a boot on before you throw into a line-out. You wouldn't get this in football.
It's just different. Rugby's just different.
Rugby is,
you know?
so.
It's just very different.
Different.
It's just very, very different.
Yeah.
I just want to check my notes and realize I have no notes on this half an hour because it was while I was walking around getting changed and brushing my teeth in that I was watching it.
Okay.
And I have no notes on this opening half hour.
That's fine.
But do you want to hear my notes on Succession, the HBO original series?
Yes.
Great. So I was half expecting you to just say no, like a little...
Yeah, but I want to test your improv skills.
No. So look, here's the thing, right? I would talk about it in more detail, but I'm also, I don't want to spoil it for anyone who is earlier in watching it. Anyone who doesn't, who, you know, hasn't watched it because it's very good. And it is one of those where everyone is despicable and I find myself sort of rooting for them. They realize, like, no, if these people are real, and they are, because these are the Murdochs, I would absolutely hate all of them with a desperate passion. And yet you find yourself weirdly rooting for them. And they're going, like, wait, no, you're a prick and I don't want this to happen.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, I've recently finished the Netflix series You, which is about, like, a mad stalker and mass murderer who is the protagonist. And, like, he is a complete piece of shit. And then you have moments where you go, like, oh, how's he going to get away with this? Oh, no, he's nearly not going to... Wait, why do I want him to get away with it? He's an idiot. Like, yeah, so that's the entire show. So I sympathise with that.
Mm. Well, and because Succession, like, it's about the Murdochs, but they have changed just enough details that they won't get sued by the richest people in the world.
Right. Yeah, which is fair enough.
So that it's literally, like, I've Googled this before and I started reading about the real Murdochs in comparison, then been like, oh, wait, no, is this spoilers? Am I reading spoilers for Succession?
Yeah.
Because I'm reading about the real people.
I do hate it when
on.
Real life gets in the way of the spoilers of whatever you're binging.
Right?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the whole thing. They've literally just changed the fact that the dad is now Scottish rather than Australian, and that is it.
Right.
That is and they changed the name.
Yeah.
And otherwise, that is basically it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is an impressive way to not get sued by those dicks.
It's also, bizarrely, and this is a fact, mostly for you, I reckon most people have seen it probably know this,
okay,
but from the creators of Peep Show.
What?!
It's a one-hour HBO original drama, like one of, you know, the most successful and talked about dramas in the world, from the creators of Peep Show.
Oh my god. I've now got this image in my head of David Mitchell playing Rupert Murdoch. which is it just seems fun.
Well, yeah, because like every now and again, because you're sort of sucked into this drama about business and Steve Walsh appears in it.
Yeah.
And every character and so on.
And the guy from The Vampire Squid appears as well.
The guy from The Vampire Squid and Steve Walsh running a bakery.
Yeah.
This would be a great program.
With Mark Corrigan.
We should use our connection to HBO and pitch this.
We should.
And yeah, and then every now and again, there's a line you go like, oh yeah, this is from the Critters of Peep Show.
That's incredible.
Like, oh yeah, that's what this is.
Well, I remember once hearing a theory that whenever somebody gets, like, is angry, or there's like an angry speech, if you stick the word Jeremy on it, you can listen to it in Mark Corrigan's voice.
You can very easily hear it as Peep Show.
Yeah. Which is it's just very accurate. So test that next time you watch any HBO series. Just stick the word Jeremy on the end of whatever somebody says and imagine it as David Mitchell and you're sorted. It makes the program better.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
So, rugby.
Rugby. The other thing that happens in the first half an hour... other than Tonga make a nice break down the short side with Fifita, and there's always something I enjoy that happens loads in this World Cup is the dummy to no one. Eteaki does it, and it works. Rob Jones tries it. Rob Jones tries it twice, right? And he's clearly doing it as like a selfish thing. It's because he wants to make a break, and then like gives it to somebody who is inevitably going into touch, whereas he could have put them in for a break.
One time that he throws a dummy from the base of the scrum and the ball is not yet at the back of the scrum. And I genuinely think he begins to pass and just has to style it out because the ball isn't there.
I can totally see that. I know exactly the one you're referring to. There's a few strange Rob Jones moments and the commentators are hell-bent on convincing us he's having an incredible game, whereas he is fine. But he also does kick the ball out of fear, like, multiple times.
Oh, yeah. But he would be a man of the match contention for me.
Would he?
Not because he's great, but because I think he's above the standard of this game still. He's
sure.
He's a very clean player.
I have kind of noticed that in this World Cup so far, it's kind of the two worst games have been the two Wales games.
Oh, no. I don't think this is awful.
No, it's not.
I did watch it at, like, 8x speed.
But I kind of found myself supporting Tonga a few times during this game. Because,
there's a point just after the second Wales try, I believe.
Yes.
Where Tonga have a series of attacks with the ball, and they get into the 22, and they have an attack on the 22. And the commentator says, look at this from Tonga against the mighty Welsh. They're really playing like champions at the moment.
Yeah, the commentators were also hell-bent on telling us that Tonga were the better team. And that they were like the one team who deserved. They literally said, like, Wales may be in the lead, but as far as we're concerned and the crowd are concerned, this is completely one-sided, and Tonga are the one team that are worth watching here. And it's just that, mate, they've not scored a try yet.
And yeah, I do think as well, even though the commentators are in the complete opposite direction,
yeah,
there is a lot of tier one bias going on from the referee.
Right?
There's a lot of bullshit calls that all go against Tonga. Yeah. And I don't think they go to Wales. I think they go against Tonga.
Yes, yeah. And, like, there's plenty of times where, you know, like, Dick Moriarty gives somebody three stripes down their back and a few moments like that.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And Tonga are...
like a toothpaste. He gives them some toothpaste on the back.
Yeah. Which is something that he always carried with him on the rugby field was toothpaste.
Yes. Gotta stay fresh, bro.
Yeah, exactly, bro. And, you know, typically most of his opposite numbers didn't have teeth back in the 80s. But, yeah, he always brought toothpaste with him. Because you never know when you might need it on the rugby field. That's an important lesson for any young kids listening to this podcast. But, Tonga, quite a lot of times, are just trying to play their part in the game and the referee just isn't having it. Referee Dave Bishop from Australia... who is down on ESPN Scrum as DJ Bishop.
Wait a minute, we've got another David Bishop.
Yes, another David Bishop.
The one who had just retired from playing rugby in Wales.
Yes.
And the one who would later go on to play rugby in Wales.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, another one. And another one.
Do you want some incredible synergy?
Go on.
Glenn Webb famously said, because he figured that he thought that Di Bishop, the scrum half, should have had more caps, when he was asked about, you know, do you feel like you were treated unfairly by selectors because on the basis of your race and so on, he said, well, Di Bishop wasn't black and he was underrepresented, or words of that effect.
Right. I mean,
as a quip.
Yeah, yeah. Again, Glenn Webb being a good lad.
Yeah, one of those quips that wouldn't be made nowadays.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Should we look at Glenn Webb's second try?
For many cultural reasons. Let's look at Glenn Webb's other try.
Yes. So it's a really nice chip by Mark Ring to put him in. So Wales kind of work it wide a little bit. And Ring, it looks like the wrong option because of... It always looks like the wrong option because wingers don't hold their width in this day and age.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a really nice chip for Webb to actually gather on the full, like into the corner. Yeah, and he dives in. It's questionable whether he gets in before the hidden corner flag, but regardless, it's well taken.
Falea, his opposite number, number 11 for Tonga, then does a pretty good attempt at putting him out, but I think it is a great finish by Webb, and from the replays, it does look like he scores it.
Yep.
Falea then looks up to the referee to check if the try's been given, sees the arm go in there, and then starts going, no! And then gets angry with himself for not making the tackle.
And then, while sat down, he just slaps Webb around the face.
Oh, yes.
He's sort of kneeling on Webb, like, in a natural position as you do after a try has been scored. And then he's really angry, and he just gets up, and it's not subtle at all. Like, he really winds it up. Like, his arm is above his head, and then he just slaps Webb full force out of frustration.
I think he's more like trying to slap his own thigh.
I think
he is angry at himself
because
he looks really angry with himself. But instead, he just smacks the guy in the face.
Yeah, and it's really funny. Like, it really made me laugh out loud, and I had to like go back and watch this like three times to check that was actually what happened. And it is.
It's a fun one. What a fun little guy Falea is. Mark Ring has an interesting game.
He does.
Because everything he does is the kind of thing that if Owen Watkin or Nick Tompkins did it these days, he would write a column in Wales Online on how players have no skill anymore.
Yes! You know what? You're spot on. You're genuinely spot on because, like, he does have a few nice touches. Like, there's a nice
other than maybe, yeah, his touch for the Hadley try is very nice.
Yeah.
Where he kind of drifts through, times his path. Well, no, it's a Rob Jones puts a lovely chip in. He regathers it, drifts a bit, and flicks some lovely hands to Adrian Hadley, who scores in the corner.
It's a really, like, unselfish pass to put Hadley in the corner. He's, like, an inch out from the try line.
Yeah. And there's some really nice bits, but there's him, like, he attempts a cross kick that goes out on the full. He tries this kick that this Glenn Webb scores off, but the kick, the space is there, but there's no one chasing it.
Yeah.
Until after he's put the kick in.
Exactly.
And since Webb is so rapid and such a good finish,
yeah,
he gets there. I'll tell you what, right? Give it to Glenn doesn't have the same ring to it, does it?
No, it doesn't.
As a tactic. But yeah, and there's a lot of him like attempting kicks. At one point, he anticipates Tonga going to chip, fair enough, regathers it in his own 22, and then just like walks around the 22 for about 10 seconds.
It's confusing,
isn't
it?
Kicking it
out.
Yeah. You think the whistle's gone or something, because he's just stood there like dawdling around, and no one's chasing him down.
He drops a lot of balls under no pressure as well.
Mm.
And look, I understand that I have regularly criticised players for doing things that I could never do.
Of course.
So that's not it. But it is quite funny, like, seeing Mark Ring doing all this, because Mark Ring's pieces are often very negative. And there is an air of, oh, back in my day, when it was the glory days, the golden age. And it just baffles me that people think that rugby was more skillful in 1987. Looking back at this, it's very funny.
He is remembered for moments like those quick hands to Hadrian Hadley.
Yes, which was excellent.
And for, the odd lovely pass and so on, the odd dummy through. I don't think there's a general all-round higher skill level in someone like Owen Watkin.
No, nowhere near.
You know, there's no... But
Team Watkin on this podcast, aren't we?
Yep. Malcolm Dacey loves a strip as well.
He does.
I think three times he strips an opposition player.
Yeah.
The ball, like Owen Watkin.
Yeah.
Just carrying the Owen Watkin theme through.
Yeah.
Can we make everything in this podcast about either Owen Watkin or Succession?
I think Owen Watkin should be in Succession.
I think Owen Watkin should be like unveiled as the extra Roy sibling
in Succession.
What do you
think Owen Watkin would be like as an actor?
terrible.
Me too. I remember
I think Owen Watkin would be a terrible actor.
When lockdown had just become a thing, and he did a thing for the Osprey social media where he said, like, oh, yeah, to any young kids out there,
yes.
Hope you're doing well. You know, it's annoying that these guidelines are in place, but try to keep sane. And he looked really uncomfortable in front of his own camera phone.
It was in front of his stairs, wasn't it? He was doing
Yeah.
Which, perfectly nice set of stairs.
I also just used the phrase camera phone, but yeah.
Hello, 2010.
Yeah.
We should do a podcast on next year's World Cup.
That's a good idea.
So
I love the Black Eyed Peas.
The fact that I remember where Owen Watkin was on his house in that video says all you need to about how glistening a screen presence he is.
Yes, I think that's...
Dan Bigger was an aspiring actor as a teenager.
Of course he was.
Yeah.
Aspiring actor, tennis player and fly half.
Yes, he played a lot of tennis as well and rugby and used to act, used to tread the boards.
Yeah. I wonder what he was like. Do you think he, like... Because I can't see him as somebody who overacts at all, especially when referees are around. I just don't see that as part of his personality. What do you reckon?
Dan Bigger is the sort of would be the sort of actor who views doing comedy as going down a gear and wants to be doing basically, like, all-out Shakespeare-type stuff, like real melodrama all the time.
Or, like, if Dan Bigger was in a film... He wouldn't be in, you know, one of these stupid, like, Shaun of the Dead-style things. He doesn't want any of that. He would want a real Hollywood classic, like The Revenant, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
He wouldn't want a part like The Bear or something like that. He wouldn't want something threatening like that. He would want to be in it for real, man.
That is absolutely right, though. Dan Bigger would want to do a role where he's freezing his bollocks off and he is sleeping inside a dead horse for 3 nights as part of the preparation for the role.
Yes, he's sleeping inside a dead horse for 3 nights?
Yeah.
The cryotherapy has really changed in the last 10 years.
Yeah, budget fridge in Poland.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like in lockdown when they can't afford flights to the fridge in Poland.
When you order your cryo chamber off Wish. So, back to the game. The Tongan tactics, I think, were very interesting. So they mentioned...
Tonga had tactics?
Well, they had kind of like... Let's say the 1-3-3-1 is like plus 100 on tactics, right? Because that's a positive tactic. Tonga were in like minus 90 on tactics.
Okay.
So if it was like a FIFA rating score. So it was mentioned a few times in the commentary that Tapeleti Tu'uta, who was playing number 6 for Tonga, was actually playing as an 8th back. So they were playing a formation of 7 forwards and 8 backs. But they put him on attacking scrums to try and win the thing. Because, spoiler alert, Wales won pretty much every single scrum in the game.
It felt like it,
bar
certainly didn't,
even
if there wasn't. I think there was a couple that Tonga won. There's one where they do a proper Faletau-style rescue mission, the ball on their own try line.
Yes.
And he somehow goes forward, which is heroic by Felice.
Yes.
Which is a sentence that will come up a lot in Welsh rugby
folklore
in the future.
Yeah. So there's a handful of scrums that Tonga win, including there's one where they get it on the Welsh line, so that they manage to force the ball, Wales carry it back behind their own try line, dot it down, meaning it's a 1 metre scrum. Because it's not a scrum 5 at this point, it's a 1 metre scrum. Tonga get absolutely monstered in the scrum, and their 9 picks the ball up and goes for the line. Wales then use the tactic of everybody mark the 9 because he's obviously not going to pass the ball. And so 3 of their backs hold him up and Tonga get another scrum. And this time they decide, well, seeing as that one went so well and we were lucky to retain the ball, let's go into this scrum and just with only 7 forwards. And so their number 8 just doesn't bind, just doesn't engage or push in the scrum. And he just stays out. And clearly the tactic is wait for the ball to come back because I want to score myself instead of the scrum half. So don't bind in the first place, because the reaction times at this point were so slow that you couldn't simultaneously push and pick up the ball. And so obviously Wales just murder them in the scrum and push them back and actually win the ball back, which I thought was a really funny approach to scrummaging by the Tongans. And if I as a scrum half can analyse that, then yeah.
Outstanding work.
Yeah. Speaking of
that's my analysis of the scrum.
Yeah.
So I really, really think that... But also, I have some other thoughts.
far next.
Yeah, so, I mean, should we do the Tongan try from the first half?
Yeah, let's do it.
What a try.
What a try.
What a try.
What a try.
Any try that involves the entire front row handling in succession the greatest HBO original series and then gets spread out to the opposite wing who scores, good with me.
All within one phase, right?
All within one phase.
Yeah. Because Rux didn't really happen at this point because everyone was scared of contact.
Yeah.
Like, it often happens that, like, you will get, like, 20 passes in one phase because no one takes
it. So they have about 3 passes that lead to the hooker, Vukovarka, making a little break, going through. He then draws and passes to one prop, who draws and passes the other prop. Then Tupo, the farther off, really charges into the 22, really makes a lot of ground up, carries really well, is stopped by Welsh tacklers, but they do that kind of like smuggly maul thing that they do all the time. And then they spread it out the other touchline. And that's like a grey area on whether that counts, because it's sort of a maul.
Yeah, but no one cared.
No. No. And they spread it right out the other touchline, where, whoa,
yes,
Tonga are ready and waiting.
It is Fialea himself, this time, who steps the last man and goes over. And yeah, finishes it really nicely. It's one of the tries of the tournament, because that started probably about 60 metres further out from the try line. Yeah,
and involves all 3 front rowers making like 50 metre runs and offloads.
Yeah, and like not screwing it up, because most players do at this World Cup.
This is why we should trust all props with all rugby.
Exactly. And just get rid of all the other players. Not worth it.
Yeah. I tell you what, goal kicking generally more solid in this game.
Definitely. Yeah, like Paul Thorburn nails
misses
a touchliner.
He really should get, but other than that, you know what? It's all right. It's pretty good. Right.
I also forgot to mention a minute ago when you did that burp. There's a point where Keith Quinn burps on Mike.
Really?
Yeah, in the commentary.
I'll tell you what. It. We have taken, we have extracted a lot of urine from Keith Quinn, but he does use one really good line in this game, where Malcolm Dacey just kicks it straight down Ekitai, the Tongan fullback. He's a very good player.
I enjoy him a lot.
Just kicks it straight down his throat. And he says that's what you'd call a room service kick. He didn't have to go far at all.
Yes.
That's a Bill McLaren line.
I thought, like, that's...
That's like...
Dallin
that's
Stanford
really
at his best.
That's really funny.
Yeah. I really enjoyed
and
that.
It comes completely out of nowhere, because I've watched like 10 games of this guy commentating, and he is such a dry cracker
right?
of a commentator.
Like, It sounds awful, but he feels like something I would have studied in my English language degree for archaic English. That's the vibe I often get from the commentary of old rugby matches. But,
and then, he pulls like a peak Bill McLaren moment.
Yeah, it's a
out
peach
of
a one-liner, isn't it? Like, I loved that. The room service take.
It's very good.
Yeah, as you say, Bill McLaren, Dallin Stanford would be proud of that.
Jamie Lyle, friend of the party.
Jamie Lyle, yeah. That's look, Jamie, if you're listening, you can have that one, and we'll all be in on it, you know? Everyone else will think it's you and it's genius. It's like how on Rugby Challenge they reused the "that'll put him in Ward 4" line.
I hope not, Justin. That's the maternity ward.
Except they deliver it really badly, whereas Bill McLaren...
I hope not, Justin. That is the...
Hello, is this the hospital?
Maternity ward. The man from Coventry has 12 internationals. Some Grant Nisbet for you.
We very briefly had him on the podcast there as a guest.
He lost his accent, which is remarkable.
Yeah. Well, he knew he was on a British podcast,
well,
so
it's the thing.
Had to go to the other set through the hemisphere to get into character of somebody who understands Northern Hemisphere rugby.
Leaves his accent behind with him sometimes. He just he drops it; it just falls off.
Yeah. But that's a skill that Mr. Clean would aspire to have.
Speaking of falling off,
yes,
we have 4 players got off injured in this game.
Mm-hmm, we do,
which the commentators use at the end. Keeping to Keith Quinn says it's a real positive of how good a game it was that 4 players went off injured because the tackles were that big.
Yes, and we'll get to the 5th injury very soon.
Mm.
But yeah, it's pretty brutal. So Steve Blackmore comes on at halftime. The visuals on screen show it as Alan Phillips, who I thought was legally called team manager Alan Phillips.
Team manager Alan Phillips.
But yeah, turns out he played for Wales.
He's one of those people, but like how Clive Woodward played for England, right?
Yeah.
And no one remembers it or knows it happened. He was kind of invented in about 1999. Yeah. And people just went like, oh, yeah, by the way, you played for Wales. Like, I know Alan Phillips played for Wales, but I didn't believe it.
Yeah. But he sure as hell was on that bench, but didn't come on. And of course, there was a limit of substitutions that you can make. So each team was allowed two substitutions, but only because of injuries were they allowed to use them. So, yeah, Wales made their two substitutions. And so, Tonga, and as you say, what a great positive that is, Keith.
So, okay. However, the I don't want to say the best replacement, but the best moment at which after someone goes off, right?
Yes.
So the Tongan prop, I believe it's Lutua, is taken off.
Yes.
And Vallejo comes on, and he's being half carried off by one of the medics, at which point onto the field runs the Tongan Santa, apparently.
Yes.
A man in a bright red, like, bright red, like Santa style tracksuit type thing.
Yeah.
With a bobble hat.
Which was red with a white bobble.
A red and red, yeah, red white bobble hat runs on. And you go, hold on, who's Tongan Santa here?
Right.
And then, right, have you looked up who this is?
No.
No. So, this was one of the Tongan coaches at the time.
Okay.
Right? Who is a man called Jerry John Fletcher, or JJ as he was known, right?
Yeah.
Who is an American who moved to Tonga to coach rugby despite knowing nothing about the sport.
Oh my god!
So, turns out Ted Lasso happened in Tonga.
Oh my
god! In 1987!
That's incredible! And he decided that he was Santa.
Yep. Because he dressed like that. He didn't have the moustache, but he dressed like Santa.
Look, if that is something that happened in Ted Lasso Series 3, I would not be surprised.
No.
Like, Ted Lasso, like, as a Christmas special, decides to dress like Santa because he thinks it will bring cheer to his players.
So, okay, so do you want to know some facts about Jerry Fletcher?
I really do. Fletcher. Like, I really, really do.
JJ Fletcher, right, was a genuine Texas cowboy.
No.
He was a US Army Navy SEAL, right? And it was only after he retired from the US military that he went to Tonga and started coaching. He discovered rugby when he was in the army and had done it a bit. And then went like, oh, I enjoyed playing that 3 times. Let's go and coach it.
It's international level.
Yep. He's basically talked about as being like enormously charismatic and charming, like Ted Lasso. He is also the youngest bull rider in the state of Texas's history.
Oh my god!
When he was 14, he competed in a bull riding competition. At 14!
How the hell did he end up in Tonga?
He's talked as one of the... He's always up for a challenge and one of the most affable people you'll ever meet.
Yeah, I bet. Did he top the country charts at any point?
Hold on, I missed this bit. Because I'd skimmed through He sadly passed away a few years ago,
right,
in 2017, and I found an obituary on him, which details his life in some detail. And there are moments I'm now picking out now that I'd completely
missed. This is amazing.
Yeah, he was known for his soulful Texan accent and his ability to tell very colourful stories. So he was also, right, a dance instructor on weekends.
Right.
Was apparently very lightfoot and a very, very good dancer. Like Ted Lasso.
Yeah. Unlike Santa Claus.
Well, yes. He was once hauled in front of army officers for dressing down, for not wearing uniform,
yeah,
and so on, and made a heartfelt promise to never do that again, and did it the following, you know. He was kind of a cheeky so-and-so.
Right.
Like just being, again, just immensely charming is the whole thing that,
yes,
comes through, like, everything you read about him. Because there's not that much online about him.
Yeah, as you wouldn't expect.
He was just,
yeah.
Yeah. He seems just very deeply loved around there. He also then, so other thing that, you know, I big fan of, he was married to his wife Janice for 45 years.
Oh, that's nice.
And apparently they were just like, even at the end, even, you know, in the by 2017 when he died, they were still very deeply in love with each other, nice. Which is lovely. And, you know, they had 3 daughters and a son,
mm-hmm.
and have a number of grandchildren. However, right, he then, yeah, moves to Tonga in the 80s, having retired from military service.
Yeah.
Right? He then, once he arrives in Tonga, he discovers they have no American beer in Tonga.
Oh.
Right? So because he was only part-time coaching, he made his other job, he became the sole distributor of Budweiser in the Kingdom of
what?
Tonga. So he is responsible for Budweiser being available in Tonga.
Oh my god! It's like he really is Santa, spreading cheer to everybody. That's incredible. Wow. So let's get this straight. So that man, the Tongan Santa, is a genuine Texan cowboy who may or may not be like a country singer, because you said like he's
a very good dancer.
Yeah, and had a nice voice or whatever it was you said. Basically, your description of him sounded very similar to Casey Musgraves. then he also distributes beer in Tonga, is the man responsible for Budweiser, whilst also being the youngest person to ever ride a bull in Texas or whatever it was.
Competitively, yeah.
That's incredible. And he just decided to coach rugby for a laugh.
That's moved to Tonga, start selling Budweiser.
I love this guy. The real Ted Lasso.
Very deeply.
Wow.
He also, just to endear him to you in particular.
Okay.
He passed away in San Diego.
Oh,
and
yes.
He's buried there.
Yeah. I mean, not buried... yes to him passing away. That's very insensitive. But yes, I'm a fan of the San Diego Legion, so I have an affinity.
He would have been a Legion fan.
He would have been a Legion fan.
You know, he probably would have been down there most weekends if he got to live to see MLR.
Definitely, definitely. He would have been down there distributing Budweiser. Oh, that would have been great. But man, what a guy JJ Fletcher is. Wow, I'm very, very glad that you mentioned him and told his story, because I would not have known that. So that's some good research you've done there.
He's just a remarkable gentleman,
yeah.
And I'm very delighted to have stumbled across his story during this game.
Yes. So other things happened in the first half. The last couple of things. So the Tongan 12, Kiteki Aho, twice loses his boot. So he loses his left boot and then loses his right boot, which, as we've established before, there are rules around this. Play must go on. And it's interesting this all happened in one
game.
There's
also laces to tie his boots to his feet.
Yes.
So they don't come off this often.
Yeah, yeah.
While we're talking about accessories on appendages...
Yeah.
He's the director of 500 Days of Summer. Glenn Webb wears a pair of, like, Alan Partridge... Oh, no! Glenn Webb wears gardening gloves.
He does! Yes, so he comes out for the second
really
half.
Really thick red gloves.
With gardening gloves. Because he doesn't wear them in the first half. And then there's a so he comes out in the second half. He has quite a good run at first. And the commentators say, no wonder he's so talented. He's got gloves on.
Yeah.
They then suggest that the reason why he's wearing gloves is because he also plays gridiron, as they refer to it. And so, yeah, he's an American footballer as well. Mm. So this must be where he gets the gloves on. But you're right. They are genuinely like proper gardening gloves.
They feel like all he could find at short notice. Like
yes.
He couldn't get any Brock James fingerless gloves.
No.
And by the way, right, Brock James has been Ospreys attack coach for 2 years and there's been no uptick in the number of players wearing fingerless
what
gloves.
What is he doing there?
Bullshit.
Yes.
What are you doing? Stop wasting your time. Get Matt Provro wearing fingerless gloves.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, he comes out wearing these really thick red gloves. Needlessly thick.
Yeah.
And then the commentator, Keith Quinn, our best mate, says, do you think that's the equivalent of what goalkeepers use in soccer? At which point, there are 49 seconds of dead air.
That's incredible. That sounds very similar to, like Dowie Morris trying to remember Mac Hansen's name. That's incredible. I keep forgetting the name of the other commentator, but...
It's not Earl, is it?
I think it is Earl. I think
is
it
is Earl. It's our Earl.
Who, every episode, you need to remind me of Earl's name. I think it might... It probably doesn't help that Earl doesn't have a surname. He's just Earl. Like he's a rapper. Or like he's Adele. He's just Earl.
I find the thought of him doing gangster rap at Twickenham
maybe.
Before a game very funny.
Maybe he's Earl Sweatshirt, who is now a very famous American rapper. Maybe they're the same person.
No, I doubt it.
Okay, fair enough.
I highly doubt he's a man who would now be in his 80s from New Zealand.
But we won't rule it out. Because we don't know
good
for certain it's not him, you know.
I would say we do.
No, I need evidence.
So, Wales bring on Jiffy.
Yeah, they do.
And they seem to just bring on Jiffy.
Malcolm Dacey does go off injured, but we'll get into his injury later on.
Right, okay.
Yes, because there is a significant thing about it that I'll get to later.
I mean, the first thing that happens when Jiffy comes on is Robert Jones makes a little half break, offloads, and he goes over in the corner, is called back for a forward pass. Yes. I'm not sure the pass was forward, but you know what? I don't mind that happening.
Sure, yeah. I was kind of, like, I was weirdly glad that that happened.
Yeah.
And I can't justify it. Yeah, I can't justify it. Oh, no, his first touch was him falling over with the ball and offloading it. Like the sniper took him
out. Oh, yeah.
And then, yeah, then he had that try as well, disallowed. But Jiffy then needlessly nails a drop goal.
Yep, having previously nailed one after the whistle already gone, he then, a few minutes later, nails one while the whistle is, while time's still
complete on. Showboating.
Needless, completely pointless.
Yeah.
Like, Wales are winning
great
that game
kick,
comfortably.
But...
yeah. They're still looking for that bonus point try and so on.
Yeah.
And he just goes for a drop goal.
Yeah.
Why?
Very confusing. And, like, brilliant.
I think the score's
kick.
Like, yeah, 6 points to. To 20-ish?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
That,
I think that's accurate, yeah.
There's no score, but I think 19-6 the score,
yeah.
Thereabout.
Something like that.
No need for a drop kick.
No need for a drop kick. And yes, he nails it, and it's a brilliant kick.
Yeah.
But yeah, totally showing off. Totally showing off. The of course, the next significant thing that happens is the web hit.
Yes.
Fuck me.
Yes.
He is out cold, and there's already two moments in the game where Webb looks a bit shaky from hits that he's taken.
Etiaki,
yes.
The fullback,
yeah.
On Glenn Webb, absolutely nails him as he's running down the wing.
Yeah, I had Etiaki written as man of the match contention until this hit, because it's not good at all. Like,
it's a great hit and he gets away with it.
It's a complete body slam, though. Like,
yes, it's horrible.
Doesn't wrap his arms at all. It's just shoulder to head. It's obviously a red card. It's one that would have been a red card 10 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, let alone now when we're actually caring about head contact in rugby games.
Unless you're Ryan Baird, yeah.
Unless you're Ryan Baird.
And so Ekitai, yeah, absolutely slams into him, knocks Webb out cold. Webb obviously knocks the ball on.
Yeah.
And then the scrum takes some time to set. But once it does, Webb looks completely out of it on the touchline.
Yes.
And he's just sort of like wandering back and forth alongside next to the scrum.
And like he's got physios checking, like constantly, like basically carrying him, like supervising him whilst he's still playing. They don't substitute him because they've used their two subs. And Wales don't go down to 14 men.
He's swaying back and forth, standing next to the scrum.
Yes.
And like basically walks over to become an extra flanker like he's a Canadian or something.
Yeah.
And, yeah, does not look well at all.
No. And the commentators are talking about this as well. Like, they're saying, like, oh, he looks seriously ill, Webb.
Like, he's out of it. He is the most clear-cut concussion you'll see.
And, like, he genuinely passed out for a few seconds.
And, like, Tom Francis, watching it back, was clearly concussed the weekend.
Yeah.
This is a
worlds
level
apart.
Far beyond
worlds
that.
Apart.
Like, it's as clear a concussion I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's awful.
It's borderline, like, you remember Osprey Sale a few weeks ago? Where Sam Cross got seriously injured.
Yes.
Came back and sat on the bench on morphine.
Yes.
Which is completely out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's almost like that.
Yeah.
Like, that's the closest thing I've seen.
But still on the pitch. And yeah, Wales don't sub him off, which is awful. And, you know, he's gone on record and said that he doesn't remember the rest of this game.
Wow.
Like, we'll come to the try he scores later on, but he didn't remember that try.
Well, the try's almost immediate.
Yes. Yeah, should we talk
so,
about that then?
Tonga kick clear, right? Wales regather and they spread it out while the Tongan defence is still setting. Defence is still setting. Like this is, you know, yeah. The Tongan defence isn't set properly. To Webb, who absolutely explodes onto the ball, and despite the fact he can barely remember what rugby is, he's still pretty bloody good at it.
He is, isn't he?
And he beats about three men. And as you say, he can't remember this, but it is probably the most famous moment of his career.
Yeah, it is.
Is this 60-meter solo try that he scores, where he outpaces everyone.
It's a fantastic
steps around everyone else.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal. One of the best individual tries of the
so
tournament.
So he's gone on record and
where there's
said...
not been a dog on the pitch.
Yeah, yeah. He's gone on record before and said that he must have scored that try completely on instinct because he was basically blackout drunk when he scored that try.
Imagine being that good at rugby.
Right? Yeah. And yeah, so he stepped two men, including Etiaki, and it was nice to get his revenge over the man who sparked him out. And yeah, scored it under the posts. And yeah, he doesn't remember it at all. I think he said that, you know, when he watched the video back a few weeks later, that was the first memory he had of that try.
Mm.
So, yeah, which is pretty powerful stuff. But also, the other thing is, after he scores it, his teammates aren't celebrating, they're concerned. Like, they're coming up to him saying, like, are you okay? When he scores that try. And, like, when Thorburn's knocking over the conversion, there's a point where you can see Hugh Richards, who's playing the second row for Wales, checking him, like, kind of, like, holding his head and, like, basically doing concussion checks with him and, like, asking if he's okay. Which is, like, a complete contrast of what you usually expect from a try scorer, because he was that bad. Mm. I kind of have written in my notes there, like, what a try by Webb. But... yeah, it's also written on Webb's Wikipedia page that it was a 90-meter score, which maybe that's how it felt, but yeah.
Yeah, and Glenn Webb was then sent, like, Wales then made the decision, Clive Rowland, who was the boys manager at the time, Welsh coach at the time, made the decision to send Webb home after this game.
Yeah.
So basically, that he since said, like, he would have started, he would continue to play the game since that. Obviously, he didn't play the first game against Ireland.
Yeah.
But they would have kept him in because he was fantastic.
Yeah.
And this try on instinct, came second in the official try of the tournament polling.
Oh, did it?
To John Kerwin's score in the opening against Italy with the dog on the pitch.
Yeah.
Which was clearly done for the dog on the pitch.
Yeah, yeah, makes sense with that in mind, with Fabio's involvement.
Yeah, but yes, he was sent home. I mean, the other part of the story is that Mark Ring has talked of this since.
Okay.
And said that he had to scream at Webb to put the ball down. Because he got over the try line, and he didn't remember what he did then.
Oh my god.
And if you watch it, like he does, he stops under the post, and then he puts the ball down.
Wow.
And I always just thought that was his style of putting it down.
Me too.
He didn't... He stopped for a while, and he only puts it down because Mark Webb reminds him to.
Oh my god.
Hence why everyone's so worried about him, because he's completely forgotten.
Mark Webb, the director of 500 Days of Summer, that you mentioned earlier, he told him to put the ball down. Like, did he get a phone call from him saying no take backs?
No. Okay. Mark Webb, the director of 500 Days of Summer and The Amazing Spider-Man and Gifted, which is a really lovely little film with Chris Evans and McKenna Grace. She's very good. She's great in the new Ghostbusters as well. Yeah, so him, I don't know how old he would have been at the time, probably about 6, but he goes, hey, put the ball down. Playing the sport that I don't know anything about.
Yeah, yeah. But hey, neither did JJ Fletcher, and he made a living out of it. So, yeah.
Mark Webb would have been 13 at the time.
Okay, and it was good of him to help Glenn out. Of no relation, of course. So yeah, that was Glenn Webb's third try, his hat-trick try. And he's luckily, I don't think he gets the ball again in the game. I don't think he has to make another tackle. Obviously, he's still running around, which is still bad for somebody who is out of it. But yeah, this game is... I think it's probably a good thing that this game is so often talked about as a bad example of how to handle somebody with concussion, because we have come very far in that respect.
Well, let's say, at least... And Wales sent him home because he hadn't recovered fully the following day.
Yeah.
And they figured...
Which, unfortunately, you know what, was the right thing to do. Yes.
Yes. And you feel for him, and they probably would have had better care of it generally. But at the time, just telling him, we're not going to risk you to having this
just
again.
Just remove.
Probably was very important. I meant he could go on and play for Wales again after this World Cup.
Yeah, yeah.
Continue playing for some years for Bridgend.
Yeah. But yeah, that was Glenn Webb. Mm. Then Tonga nearly scored the try of the tournament, where they once again go sort of 80 metres. And in one passage, like one phase, they throw 11 passes, which is remarkable. And they're all necessary, and they all stick, and it was great seeing rugby played like that in this World Cup.
Yeah, I mean, it's lovely, isn't it? And then they eventually do score a really nice try again afterwards.
I enjoyed that they win the ball.
Fafita, the scrum half.
Yes, they win the ball through Liava'a, who's the replacement centre, from him just completely shoulder-barging Jiffy off the ball is the way that they won the turnover. But yes, no, sorry, talk us through the Fafita try.
Oh, it's just very nice. Just a bunch of big offload, nice. Then some nice And then there's Vita pops up on the end and does that thing where he has to raise the ball high above his head because he's being taken out so he can eventually reach over and ground the ball. And no one has done that in a very long time.
Yes. And like he kind of gets around three Welsh defenders, doesn't he, for Vita? And
yeah,
Keith Quinton said he was going to get to that line if it killed him. And it nearly did. So I don't know what happened that nearly killed Fifita en route to that try line, but I'm glad he came out of it well. He came out unscathed.
I'm glad he came out of it well. Yeah. It's entirely the inspiration of JJ Fletcher.
Yes, yeah, definitely.
You know.
Or the birth of Tim Visser.
Or the birth of Tim Visser, probably really, really inspiring moment for him. Yeah.
As
do you think this was the... We can pinpoint that is the moment Tim Visser was born.
I reckon so. I reckon he was born while that try was being scored. So not much really happens.
It's how he developed the instincts, which you just sense there was a major try being scored somewhere.
Yes. Not much happens in the rest of the game. So there's a point where Leivata mugs off Hopkins with a short dropout, which is a lot of fun.
That's great. I mean, I have written in my very limited notes, quick dropout makes Welsh player look like a dickhead.
Yeah. Because what I really like is Hopkins has stood like literally about an inch away from him because Leivata stood on the 22-metre line to take this dropout, which is quite a brave tactic. And Hopkins is kind of pointing at him saying like, watch the short one. I'm going to cover the short one. And he takes the short one and Hopkins doesn't gather it.
It's very good.
Like he literally had to bend down half a metre. And he would have gathered that ball. But no, he managed to still mug him off. And that is... I mean, we're getting close to Dick of the Day territory, but...
The one other thing that isn't Dick of the Day contention that I think is worth mentioning from the end of this game is the actual final play, where Tonga are given a penalty on the 22-metre line, right? And it is 29-13, and they go for goal.
It's just for a laugh,
They go for goal in the last play. They bring their points difference down to minus 13, which, you know, I respect, might help them out come the tail end of the tournament.
Sure,
yeah, they're going to have to beat Ireland,
I suppose,
by a big
only
margin.
4 points for a try. It makes it hard to justify, doesn't it?
Well, that's true. Yeah, I suppose with the conversion, though, it comes...
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. It's just... It feels like an odd thing to do.
Sure.
Kicking for goal
but
in the last
fair
play.
Fair play to them. So the final score is 29-16 to Wales. And I believe this brings us on to Man of the Match and Dick of the Day.
Yes. Should we do Dick of the Day? Because I think there's some Dick of the Days to talk about.
There's a lot. So for me, there's one contender is... At one point, Wales try to run an interesting wall move, and they completely fuck it up. So it's Kevin Phillips is the man in possession on the wall move, and he dummies to about three people charging past him, and then just forgets that he's meant to pass to one of them and turns around and runs, and has no run-up, whereas everybody else did, and gets flattened as a result. So he's in contention. Oh, another one is, of course, Fuka for losing both of his boots. When we'd already had explained to us that you're not allowed to lose your boot in a game of rugby. It's not fair. But my dick of the day is Paul Thorburn.
Okay.
Do you know why I'm about to give it to Paul Thorburn?
Well, okay. So I think my dick of the day is in similar territory.
Okay.
So should we come back and I'll run through my contenders before I give my
Let's
actual
do
one
this.
Out.
Yeah, you go.
Okay. So one of my contenders for Dick of the Day is Conor Roy, who is obviously of all the Roy children, probably the one least involved in the Waystar business. And yet there's an awful lot happening over the course of the full HBO original series Succession that leads you to think that actually is he the least clued in, one who could hold the keys to power, and very much doesn't. And there's an awful lot as we go through the rest of the tournament, we see who is going to be named as the successor in Succession. That's going to be lots of business. Another option that we really have open to us is Rob Jones, who at one point is having a little run down the wing after a nice little Welsh handling move.
Yeah.
And he throws the ball back in field to a red jersey that he sees chasing across. And then when a Tongan intercepts the ball and turns around and runs in the opposite direction, he has a look on his face where he clearly remembers that Wales aren't playing in red today.
Yes, we are the green team.
This is the first time Wales have ever played in green.
Yeah. Commentators mention that a lot.
Yep. Wales have previously played in black and red and no other colours.
Yeah.
It's the first time they'd ever played in green in this game. And Rob Jones did not realise that.
Yeah.
That's a big dick of the day contention for forgetting what colour your team are playing in.
Yep.
But I think... So, twice during this game, does Paul Thorburn take out his own man?
Yes. So, I said we'd get to the Malcolm Dacey injury.
Yes.
That came as
was
a result
of... Was that how he got injured?
Yep. That came...
He was down... I thought he was doing a fake in... You know that fake injury thing where players lie down after they make a mistake?
Nope.
I thought he was doing that.
Nope. So what happens is, Malcolm Dacey runs a move where the plan is he passes to 12, Hopkins loops around him, gets the ball back, and then passes to presumably either Ring or Thorburn outside him.
Mm.
Thorburn gets his line completely wrong and just decks Dacey.
Yep.
And just runs clean into him. And yeah, Dacey hobbles over. He's completely blindsided by him. And yeah, like ruptures his ankle. And Dacey's then hobbling for the next 10 minutes before eventually he has to come off.
Mm.
So yeah, Thorburn injured him. And like, I laughed out loud at that point.
It's very funny.
About the fact that Thorburn decked his 10.
The move would have been exactly as useful as a straight crash ball.
Yeah. Yeah,
because
yeah.
Doing it so far back, the Tongas had just stood off waiting for them to finish doing their little dance.
Literally.
At one point as well, the commentator, Keith Quinn, says when a prop tries to do a little sidestep before contact, he says, look at him, doing a little war dance on the spot.
Yes, I enjoyed that. I did enjoy that.
Ooh,
yeah.
Questions?
But yes, so Thorburn then gets the ball and runs into one of his own men again. And the fact that he did it not once but twice means that he has to be Dick of the Day.
He has to be Dick of the Day. And it is the second time it is Paul Moriarty who bodies him and sends him flying off his
feet. Of course.
But Moriarty also falls over, so credit to Paul Thorburn.
Absolutely.
And look, there's an argument to be made the second time Moriarty is the one far more in the wrong. Like, he is the one who gets his line wrong.
Yeah.
And Thorburn, you know, he's the one that should have adjusted. But there is a common factor between these two things.
Yes. 100%.
And that is that Paul Thorburn twice takes out a teammate whilst he's looking for the ball.
Yeah, absolutely. So Paul Thorburn is both of our Dick of the Day.
Yep, Paul Thorburn absolutely nailed on Dick of the Day.
Yeah. So man of the match for me, I think Amone, the Tongan 10, had a really good game. Again, I think Etiaki had a good game from fullback, but he also sparked out Glenn Webb. I think Ring had his touches, but also was generally not as good. So my man of the match is Glenn Webb for scoring three tries and just generally, like, around the park, he looked like Wales' most competent player and looked like a slightly more modern winger than 1987.
Yes.
So credit to him. Yeah, Glenn Webb's my man of the match.
I think both scrum halves actually play quite well. They both make lots
of errors. Sure, Rob Jones plays well.
I think both... both scrum halves make errors, but are look pretty good, look like good players.
Okay, sure.
And Rob Jones's service and his actual skill set are so clean that he really actually helps Wales do things when they... Because when Wales do things, they all come very quickly. It's like Wales will have a scrum, then they'll have scored 7 seconds later, right?
Okay.
Whereas Tonga will spend ages pushing and then not have scored.
Sure.
And I think a lot of that is down to Rob Jones. There's a few like passes he throws and like the little kick he makes in the lead up to the Hadley try and so on. He's a very, very clean player. Like, his skills are very, like, on point and accurate. And sometimes he does things that are not accurate, but generally he is very accurate. I think Tupou has an excellent game, aside from the scrum where he is absolutely murdered.
Yeah.
So you can't give it to a prop who loses every single scrum, including on their own ball. But I thought he played generally well. But man of the match kind of has to be Glenn Webb. It kind of has to be. And I thought
he
was the standout... In the first half, he was the standout, especially for scoring off instinct when he couldn't remember what rugby was.
Yeah.
And obviously goes off and then comes back on later because Wales were down to 14 without him.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I think it is, as you say, it is remembered as the Glenn Webb game. And when I looked this game, you know, when I was reading it out last week and when I was looking at it in any context, it is kind of the Glenn Webb game where he scores a hat-trick and gets sparked out. Yeah, and he plays very well even aside from his free tries.
Yeah. No, agreed. That's good. We've agreed on both, which is a rare occurrence, even in 1987. So, yeah, that's good. That's good.
Go us. So, thank you for joining us for this episode of the Succession podcast.
Episode 69.
Episode 69 of the Succession World Cup Retrospective podcast.
Yeah.
Very quickly, William, who do you think is going to end up in charge of the company in Succession?
Dr. Jeff Banterfield.
Absolutely agreed. Please join us next week when the game we'll be covering will be Canada 19, Ireland 46.
Sounds like a banger.
Sounds like a great game. I really, really cannot wait. We've got some real standout games coming up. I mean, we've got England and Scotland putting 60 points on Zimbabwe and Japan. We've got France beating the USA. We've got Fiji, Italy, we could be a quite good game, but will probably be boring because I've seen this World Cup before.
Yes.
Australia beating the USA, New Zealand beat... Oh, I mean, I don't want to give spoilers.
All the big hits are coming up.
But frankly, the next 10 games, 9 of them are blowouts.
10 games?
Of the next 10... Yeah. Of the next... Hold on. How far do we have to go? Of the next 14 games, 12 of them are blowouts.
Okay. That's going to be fun. Oh, man, I enjoyed the
Gonzalez podcast. And even then, one of them, I'm being really, really kind on what I consider a blowout because it's still a big margin, but both teams scored lots of points.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. Yeah, so that's a lot of exciting content to come your way.
Yep. We're going to need to find a lot of guests for these episodes.
Yeah, we are. And hey, we might have already found some.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll see you in the future for Canada against Ireland next, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so.
In the meantime, I hope you have a lovely week, a great, great time, and you do an awful lot of succeeding.
Yes. Goodbye, everybody.
See ya.
Bye!
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.